Good afternoon. Welcome to this afternoon's NAESP Early Careers Principals webinar on Wait, Did I Sign Up for This? Tips for Leading Your School Through COVID-19. At this time, I'd like to introduce Dr. Gracie Branch, NAESP's Associate Executive Director for Professional Learning. Hi, Gracie.
Hi, Honor, and thank you, and great to be here. Thanks, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. I have the pleasure of introducing our facilitator today. Jen Schwanke has been an educator for 22 years, teaching or leading at all levels. She's also the author of two books, You're the Principal, Now What? Strategies and Solutions for New School Leaders, and The Principal Reboot, 8 Ways to Revitalize Your School Leadership. She's written for Choice Literacy, Education Week, Teacher, Principal, and Principal Navigator. And she's also a presenter at conferences for ASCD as well as NAESP. In fact, a few years ago in Orlando, Florida, I had the pleasure of attending Jen's session, and that's when I first met her. She's a dynamite presenter, and I know that you're really going to appreciate her presentation today because she's real and she gives real practical tips for leaders. She's also an instructor in educational administration at Miami University. She's currently a practicing principal at Dublin City School District in Dublin, Ohio. And Jen, I know you're a real active member in your Ohio Association of Elementary School Principals. So thanks again for being here, and I'm going to turn it over to Jen.
Thank you so much, Gracie, and thank you, Honor, as well. It is such a privilege to be here today, everyone. I know that the majority of our audience here is early career principals, but perhaps we have some aspiring principals, and perhaps we have some veteran principals who are looking for just a little bit of insight or connections to others. So thank you so much for that introduction. This is a quick picture of my family. I give you this just to honor that we are in the middle of a pandemic, and as principals, our jobs, our workloads have gotten infinitely more complicated, and many of us are balancing families, growing teens or babies or college students and spouses or partners, and so it's a lot to handle, and I want to acknowledge that right off the bat, because I know if you're like me, there are times that you might think, oh gosh, what did I sign up for? And so I wanted to just tell you just briefly about me. As Gracie said, I live in Dublin, Ohio, an elementary school principal, although I've dipped my toe in all the levels of learning and really do find a great deal of joy with these younger learners. So as a way to really connect us, we are going to use the chat box every now and then throughout this presentation. So if you could take a moment and give us your name, first name is just fine, where you live, and the year you are in your principalship. So you could say aspiring, or I'm in year 2, I'm in year 1, I'm in year 40, whatever you'd like to say. And maybe tell us a little bit about your biggest challenge right now. I don't mean this year, I mean right now. What is it that weighs heavily on your mind right now? And I'm going to implement all of my learning strategies and give you a little bit of time. Wait time is huge, as you know, to get some good participation and insight here. Okay, we have somebody from Pennsylvania in year 18. We have a first-year principal. The others that would like to, there we go. And I'm seeing here, Anne, you mentioned the challenge of keeping students engaged during remote learning, attendance being an issue, hiring there. Yes. Oh, goodness, we have some great topics to cover. I see here that Chamara is managing being a mom of 4. With 3 doing distant learning and 1 who's potty trained. Being a mom has been really hard for me as well. I'm going to just be very vulnerable and tell you that. I don't feel like I'm doing anything well right now, but we will get into that. So I'm going to continue with the presentation. If you are just getting to your keyboard, please do add your name and add your challenge. Again, that's just a way to connect us. I want to just review our goals for today. What we're trying to do is really talk about how to react to uncertainty with confidence and skill. We're going to talk about how to connect with others, how to use innovation and opportunity to support our work, and how to really flip crisis into opportunity. That's going to be one of the most fun concepts we're going to talk about today. The format, I want it to be interactive, so I will ask you to put some things in the chat room here and there, and then at the end, I really hope to have some time for some Q&A that we would, again, use the chat room to utilize. I want to start this, whether you are in year one or year 18, that you were selected for this role because you are strong enough to do it. There is a very real risk in this profession of this imposter syndrome concept, and that is where you think, how in the world did I end up with the master key to this building? Who thought I could do this? But really, the truth is someone did select you for this role because you are strong enough to do it, and we really can't allow those doubts and self-criticisms to come in and take over, because confidence and strength and a real sense of self-efficacy are guiding practices to make sure that we're successful. But when we do feel weak or we feel vulnerable, those feelings are ones we do have to identify. Let's start, though, with some positive feelings. I want to take a moment to acknowledge this picture. I was walking through the cafeteria this was actually last spring, and I saw this little girl reading this book. Look at the expression on her face and look at how to win any argument. Now, I'm telling you something. This little girl had a goal, didn't she? And she had a feeling that was going to drive her to read this book, and she was going to come out of it winning, right? And I love this picture because this child is 11 years old, and she is taking her future by the hands. I look at her, and I see the way she's feeling. And I want you to now think about that. Think about your positive feelings that you might have right now. I have some listed here: hopeful, excited, challenged, motivated, opportunity bound, or enthusiastic. You might also have new job jitters, the same feelings you had when you walked into your first waitressing job or your first job, I don't know, at a coffee shop or a strawberry patch. Those feelings are very real and definitely things that we want to capitalize. So in the chat, would you please put what positive emotions you're feeling now? I see that we have one from Anita who feels excited and thoughtful. Super relatable there, Navita. And so please, others, add in the chat box what positive emotions you're feeling right now. Challenged and constant growth. Good. Thankful. I'm always glad when the person comes in with some gratitude. Thank you, Jeannie. That's wonderful. Excited, appreciated. That's wonderful, Nicole. It's wonderful that we are feeling appreciated. And I do actually want to talk about that a little bit later, about how, boy, nobody questions the need for principals anymore. We are definitely needed. Now we have some more added in here. We have motivated, optimistic, grateful, encouraged, non-judgmental. Dujuana, that is a wonderful one. Too much judgment in the world right now. Thank you for this participation in the chat room. I'm going to move now to some negative emotions. And these, I feel a need to reassure you, these are all very, very normal. Those feelings of insecurity, I know more than one principal have told me in various presentations, I'm just waiting for it to get back to normal. Feeling underappreciated or tired. A lot of people asking me lately, is this sustainable? I just don't know if I can keep this up. And I would ask you right now, just again, in the sense of collegiality and connection, put in some negative emotions that you're feeling at this time. We have Anne telling us she's exhausted, and certainly relatable to that one too. I sometimes look at the bags under my eyes and wonder where in the world they came from. So we have some frustration here. We have a lot of anxiety, being overwhelmed and tired. Thank you for sharing. Again, this is a time we can be vulnerable together, and I really appreciate the honesty here. Feeling overwhelmed is the prominent theme here. And Gracie, you added sad that you can't spend time with friends and family. I do think there's a sense of loneliness that we're all feeling, and it's particularly complex for a principal because we're not supposed to feel lonely, right? We're surrounded by people who have needs, and our job is to fulfill those needs. right? But that can sometimes perpetuate into a feeling of deep loneliness, especially if we don't have the connections with those we love that we used to. So I'm going to shift right now into something I want you to consider. This is a wonderful quote by Damon Linker in The Week. And this really helped me understand that why I was feeling so unstable or a little bit uncertain. And what Damon Linker says here, basically, I'm paraphrasing, is humans are futural creatures. We look ahead, right? That's how we live our lives. And it is triply so, I would say, for principles, because everything we do in our minds, naturally, it must be something in our DNA, we're thinking about what we're going to do differently next time. The next time we have this staff meeting, I'm going to do blank. The next time I send out this email, I'm going to do blank. We're constantly thinking a month, a year, or a decade from now. And that is all gone. We lost that ability to plan ahead because we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. And that can be really, really... So I want to talk a little bit about the positives in it, though, and we're going to get to the negatives. But the positives are important because we are gaining things. And that's why I loved all the positive emotions that you shared in the chat room. This is a time for me that I have learned how much I really do love leading through a crisis. And I really do love the chance to flip things and do things differently. It reminds me of this quote from John F. Kennedy. And he said that the Chinese use two brushstrokes to use the word crisis. One of the brushstrokes stands for danger, and the other stands for opportunity. So in any type of crisis or hard time, we need to be aware of the danger, but also recognize the opportunity. And here's where I'm going to tell you, I struggled a little bit planning this presentation because there's so much going on in our world. It is complex. It is deep. It is personal. It is real. And it's not just COVID. It is racial injustice. It is an accepting of other people's opinions. It is a political environment that is so divisive and painful to watch, quite frankly. Now, all of that feels like danger, at least to me. But in that also is opportunity. And I think as principals, we have an opportunity that is really unlike most people because we're not working in isolation. We are working in a place where we really do have influence. And so when I think crisis, I think, okay, opportunity or danger. I have this on a backdrop of a sunrise, maybe, or a sunset. Maybe. And that's on purpose. If you're a beach lover and you stand, whether you're on the West Coast or the East Coast, and you look toward the sun, it might be coming up or it might be coming down, and it looks the same, doesn't it? Because with either one becomes some sort of opportunity. And I could go deeper into that. I'm not going to in the interest of time. But just think about how things can sometimes look one thing, but they might be the other. And in both cases, it can be something really beautiful. This graphic is going to really ground us through the remainder of this presentation. Whenever we have a hard time, and by that I mean a bullying incident, something relatively small like that, or something huge like a pandemic, when there's something hard, we need to do these three steps. And they're cyclical, right? The one, the two, and the three don't necessarily happen in sequential order. But first, we need to react. And by reacting, I mean identify that crisis, mobilize people, and respond. Now, again, that might be happening while you were still rebuilding something. It's a circle. Another step in this process is to recover. And recovering means to really think, plan, and implement something that is going to help you work through the crisis. And then, of course, we'll want to rebuild. This is where courage and bravery sometimes comes in, particularly right now when we're in a pandemic, and we really have an opportunity to change things, to abandon old ways and lead toward new ones, plan for the next challenge. So this is really, I think, to me, the most exciting of this, of the steps, if you will, in this at never-ending cycle. And we're going to talk a little bit more about those. If you have any questions as we go along, I really do encourage you to put them in the chat. I am not the best at multitasking, but Honor is there, and she will interrupt if there's anything that she feels is timely, that questions or concerns or whatever, if you'd like me to dig in any deeper. So let's talk about the step number one, really, which is reacting. So you have something coming. Again, could be something big, could be something small. And this is where you need to really pause and react to the situation. When you pause and listen and you refuse to let yourself panic, you can begin to prioritize immediately. Prioritizing is a huge part of the reaction because you'll need to really determine what is the most important thing to do. Many times, and this is not just early career principles. This is including me who's been doing this many years now, 18 years I've been doing this. And I often am not sure at all what to do. But an important part is to communicate that uncertainty with confidence. I, more times than I can count, have said, wow, I don't really know what to do, but I do know that we're going to be able to figure this out. Let's do this together. And it's that communication with confidence that's so important. The other thing that I think is important during the reaction phase is to not worry about judgment. I was so glad to hear somebody mention the judgment. I think this world is predisposed, kind of a culture of judgment right now, right? But we really cannot, as principals, be bound by the risk of judgment. The reason? Because it's going to happen anyway. People are going to judge you. And often we as principals rely on this phrase, you know, I'm just going to do whatever's best for kids. Unfortunately, it's not always that simple. One thing you can do is you can say, I'm going to do the best possible for all the stakeholders in this situation. And I'm not going to let judgment stop me because it shouldn't stop you. It shouldn't slow you down. Reacting immediately is part of this process as well. But sometimes, I'm going to talk about myself, sometimes I make the mistake of feeling like I have to act right away. And that is not necessarily the truth. Reaction can just be in pausing to listen. The power of words are enormous here. I have a friend, her name is Melissa. I love her to pieces. And what I learned from her was the power of the word okay. Melissa can take any kind of problem and she can respond using this word in so many ways. She can say, okay. She can say, okay. She can say, okay. She can use this word to calm, to mobilize, to spur into action, but it is a word saying, I accept the message that's coming to me, and my words back to you are, it's okay. That's a wonderful tool to use. Another tool that's wonderful to use is, I hear you. Not in the weird, seepy, sappy psychiatrist way, but more, okay, I'm hearing you. I hear you that this is a problem, and we're going to work together on this. And I hear you is an acknowledgement of a problem. Similarly, I see you. I see that this is bothering you. I see that we have something we need to address. Just to acknowledge that there is an issue and that you see that it's there. Often I'll use things like, okay, tell me more or help me understand. Sometimes problems come to you in the voices of other people and you're not quite sure what the issue is, right? And so that's where you can say, all right, tell me more. Help me understand this. The other verbal reaction that you can give I find very helpful is, I think we have time. You know, I know this feels like a crisis, but I think we really do have time to work through this. Now that we've talked about words, let's talk about reacting through actions. Some considerations I want to give to you today. These are important for me. Visibility versus availability. Now, no offense to anyone who jumped on the idea of having a mobile office. You'll see the picture on the screen here. You know, the porta principle, I'm going to get a cart and I'm going to go in the hallway. I'm telling you this would never work for me. Never, never. Here's below in the picture below. It's my office where I have not gone out in the hall. I want to be available, but I don't always feel like visibility is the most important thing. It's a very big distinction there. I need to have time to breathe some time and to think. And so I am not ashamed and will never apologize for the fact that I have an office and the ability to close the door. Okay? And again, no offense intended for anybody who does want to be much more visible in the hallway. I feel very much like I'm visible, but I am not putting myself out there in a sense that where I can be seen, but not necessarily available. I feel like there's a distinction there. You just have to find out what kind of works for you. Another area here to think about is the difference between a reaction versus proaction. When we act during a hard time, sometimes we are just reacting and that's fine. But it is also important to think, okay, am I being proactive to eliminate risk of further issues or crises? Just think about this. Reaction versus proaction in terms of action is a really fun exercise to kind of put yourself through to see which one you're choosing there. This next one is one of my favorites. I've done entire presentations on the difference for principals between supporting staff and empowering them. Teachers love the word support, and they use it often in a critical context with their principals. He just didn't support me. I didn't get support. From my previous principal, there was just no support there. And that word is often used as a manipulation tool. Again, no offense to any teacher who does it. It's probably not conscious. But we are sometimes, as principals, brainwashed into thinking we have to support every teacher all the time. And that, as a matter of fact, I wish I had a dollar for every time I thought I can't support this teacher's decision or what they said or what they did. What I can do is empower them to help solve the problems. Support does not mean looking to me to solve the problems. That's not what that means. Empowerment is what you really want, so that you're supporting them by making sure they have the tools to help support their own growth and movement. Impulsivity versus quick thinking. This is, again, being vulnerable. I tend to be very impulsive. I tend to think I have the exact right answer immediately, and that's different than quick thinking. Quick thinking, in my eyes, is when I'm not being impulsive, but I am focused. Again, maybe I go in my office, I close my door, and I think quickly about what kind of efforts I need to do to solve a crisis or a problem. Very, very big difference, because impulsivity tends to be something we regret, whereas quick thinking tends to be something that we're proud of in retrospect. Listening is an action, by the way. Listening and allowing what you hear to drive your quick thinking is a reaction that you can use during a hard time. One of my favorite twos is micromanagement versus organization. And these words don't seem like antonyms, and they're really not. But often principals feel like they need to manage every single decision, or they need to be so proactive and so communicative that everyone knows every single thing that's going to happen no matter what. And that's just not possible. What is possible, though, is to be organized in how we communicate, how we connect to others, and how we mobilize our staff. Reacting to hard times, it's difficult to not want to solve everyone's problem, right? It's difficult not to micromanage, especially when people are asking you to, if they want you to own every single thing. What I would challenge, again, is to think about what is your role and what do you want it to be? When I was an early career principal, I would have answered this question very clearly and quickly. I would have said my role is to support everyone. My role is to be everything to everyone. I want to be their everything. I didn't want that, nor could I sustain that. So really what it comes down to is evaluating your vision and purpose. I have come to know that my role is not to be everything to everyone. My role is to support my school, empower my people, have the students feel that they belong there and that they all have a voice and they are all valued. That's my vision and purpose. And then I look around and see who is there. I have management team members. These are teachers. These are students. These are parents and community. I do not need to be everything to everyone. And in fact, if I try, I will not be able to react to hard times in any sort of meaningful way. And so this slide really is about giving yourself permission to say, I almost want to whisper it because it feels like a dirty word here, giving yourself permission to say, that's not my job. A problem comes, I can say, that part isn't my job. My job might be to oversee the solution, or my job might be to go down the hall and find a teacher who may be responsible or accountable or up to the task of handling this, but my job is not to be everything to everyone. One of the things that I often see, and I'm going to ask for a little bit of input in the chat, so prepare your fingers and your keyboards, everyone. Think about the baggage you hold as you go into your job. All of us have it. I think of the man who said to me, he was a first-year teacher, and he came up to me after I had done a PD for his district, and he said he had had a principal who was a terrible communicator. She never told him anything. And he said all of the teachers spent so much time scrambling and scrapping for the information and the story, you know, what's going on, where should we be, when's that fire drill, when's this event, what do we need to do with our reading improvement plan? They never had any idea. So he said to himself, I am never going to under-communicate. I am going to over-communicate no matter what. So he did. Every single tiny little minutia, he communicated via email, by calling staff meetings, by recording screencastifies and sending them out. Well, what happened is people were overwhelmed. They started to edit his every word he said. They started to catch him on errors. And he said, I feel like I can't win. I made this promise to myself, and now it's backfiring. And I said to him, that's because you got too blinded by your baggage. You have to realize there's a middle ground. That baggage that you're carrying, put down just half of it. Another one that's common is, I'm going to make sure people stick to the rules. If you're a rule follower, or if you just get to burn your saddle, if people don't stick to the rules, you might become the enforcer. Again, you might want to just relax that baggage a little bit and find a middle ground. Another one is, I will be available to my people when they need me. I talked to a principal once who, she said the first day of her principalship, she made sure to get everyone's cell phone in her phone and to give it out to everyone. And I said, you know, maybe you should have given some time for that. Don't let them think they can text you at 2 a.m. because if they do and you answer, then guess what? More people are going to text you at 2 a.m. You don't need to be available nonstop. I have a few more of these baggage examples, but in the meantime, I'm going to ask you to look inside thyself and see if there's anything, a promise that you made that maybe you took a little bit too far. I understand this is asking you to be a little vulnerable. I get that. But just look at the promises you made to yourself and put them in the chat if you feel comfortable. Another one that I see happening is, I will not let negativity overtake me. And this is someone who maybe has seen so much negativity that they are going to, by golly, be positive no matter what. This can sometimes be a mistake because sometimes we need to allow the negativity to be in the room. We need to allow it to have a voice. We need to acknowledge it, and we need to recognize that it is a driver and a motivator in a negative way for many of our people. Another promise is, I will do it differently. Many, many teachers who are aspiring administrators say this a lot. And then they get the master key, they get the office, and they realize that it is not necessarily easy, as easy as it looks. So a promise to do it differently. And then that can feel like coming back on a self-promise if you can't really, in fact, do it differently. And that can be a hard learning curve for new administrators. I see some people who have added to the chat, and truly thank you, Kimberly and Anne and Fatima. These are wonderful ones. I'm going to actually need to write these down. I will not micromanage. Here's a rules one. I will not be biased. That's a really hard one for me, Fatima, because I promise myself that frequently, that I will not be biased, and I find that it's a lot harder to really leave your bias at the door, like they say. So feel free if there's anyone else who would like to add about your baggage. Oh, I'm a multitasker. Girl, we should have an after party. Yes, that can be a baggage. Trying to make up for other people's weaknesses. Yep, that's a direct tie to the exhaustion you feel at night, Nicole, right there. Tamara has one, this always being available. Yep, neglecting home stuff. These are really good, you guys. Okay, a few considerations. Remember, everything that you say and do will be forwarded. That's that thing where you are always watched. And so as you react, again, the best thing is probably slow down and not be impulsive. Do your quick thinking, but be careful with it. Remembering that you'll never please them all. And this, Nicole, I think I just referenced this, that exhaustion of being relentlessly available and constantly evaluated. A good question to ask yourself is, who can be your balance, whether it's a spouse or an assistant or a secretary or a teacher that you deeply, deeply trust? Who can be the one who might tell you? I had an assistant once. She's wonderful, and she would say to me, okay, you're being impulsive. We need to slow down. And every time she did that, I hugged her because I said, thank you. See, you found my weakness, and you can balance me. Another consideration is to think of who you can call. There's some really compelling research out there right now, and I wish I had gotten some links to share with you on this, but what they're finding is the most impactful PD that principals engage in, believe it or not, is not, unfortunately, the traditional ones. It is the people we call. It is who we pick up the phone and ask our questions to. That is the principal PD that really works. So step two, recovering. This is the part of the process where we make a plan and we say, okay, here's what we're going to do. So whenever there is any kind of crisis or hard time, there needs to be a recovery period where we say, okay, here's what we're going to do. My very first principal, she was wonderful, and she was all business, folks. She was all business. And she would listen to a problem, she would think, and she would literally say, okay, here's what we're going to do. And she would just start saying, Mr. Miller, I need you to go down the hall and call this parent. Mr. Chiquita, I need you to go and create a document in which we outline our plan. Like, she would just start managing the situation. And she would do it with such confidence that her plan was something that we could all get behind. Part of this, too, recovery process is communicating thoroughly. You really have to think, especially in this day and age, what are the best ways to reach your school and your community? For me, I was a little bit reluctant to dig into the Facebook world. I had had a personal account, but I did not want to get into it professionally. But I happened to be transferred to a school where they had a Facebook account, and the parents were just going rogue on this thing. And I realized, wait a minute. I'm resisting this, and I'm mad that it exists, but what I need to do is embrace it. And so what I did is I took over the Facebook page, and I told everyone there's going to be factual information, timely information. Comments that are toxic or misinformation are not going to be approved and posted. I realized the demographic of my parents is something like, 97% of my parents were on Facebook. This was the best way to communicate. So I was killing myself writing emails no one was reading. But when I switched over and embraced the stinky part of social media and took it over, it really did help for me to connect to my school and community. We're going to talk a little bit later, too, about identifying old and stale ineffective patterns and routines. But this is part of the recovery where you identify those and you say, why are we even doing this? This may be something that was implemented in my school in 1986 when I was still in high school. Why are we still doing this? This can actually be a really, really fun activity to identify some old, stale, ineffective patterns because it allows you the chance to embrace those opportunities that we talked about that will let your school evolve. Another step to this is to talk a little bit with yourself or with your leadership team or teachers, whoever, community, about your purpose, your priorities, and your patterns. We are really driven by purpose, especially principals, because our purpose tends to be a deeply entrenched system of beliefs about why we're here. But we also have our priorities and our patterns that we follow. And it really does help sometimes to think of when you're recovering from a crisis or a hard time, to think whether it's purpose, priorities, or patterns that's driving you. Choose one of those, and the other two will fall into place. Again, I could go a lot more into that. I'm not going to right now, but sometimes you can say, wait, what is driving me right now? And help decipher your way through it. So if it's purpose, which is, okay, this is something that my school believes in and really needs to master, that's one way of making decisions in recovery. Another one is priorities. Again, if it's a safety issue or if it's something where you feel that it needs to be solved immediately, that's another response. Or if it's patterns, well, this is the way we've always done it. This is just what we do. It works for the community. That's another set of decision-making schema that you might need to take a look at as you recover. Recovering really does include relying on the expertise of staff, students, and parents. There's a lot of people around us that may know better, do better, or be better than we are, and that is not a problem. We don't have to be the best at everything. We really can rely on the expertise of staff, students, and parents. Part of this, too, is letting those people help us monitor and respond to changing needs of our school. Again, if we're still operating like we did years and years ago, we aren't responding to changing needs, and that doesn't help us recover from a hard time. We can do this through ongoing conversation, check-ins, questions, surveys, really to get the feedback from the people that we know are boots to the ground doing the work right now. It's all about seeing opportunities as we work through the recovery process. I want to talk a little bit about the people that we work with. You'll see an image here of a flat tire. As you consider your staff, your parents, and your students, I think it's really helpful to think about if there's a select few that are taking all the air out of your tires. This is a real risk for early career principals, because sometimes we find that 90% of our energy is being given to 10% of our people. And the risk there is that we can't drive our car, right? We need to have at least, some even distribution of air. I'm going to tell you just a quick story. I was accused not too long ago through Twitter from someone who does not know who I am of toxic positivity. I had posted a picture of a staff member who happened to be working in her classroom on the weekend, and somebody tweeted, again, they didn't know me, and they said, this is an example of toxic positivity that is ruining us as teachers. And I'm going to tell you, I was devastated. I was devastated. I thought, no, that was the opposite. My intent was to honor the work, the commitment, and the dedication of this teacher who I know well. I love her. And I actually happen to know her so well that I know she has a very big family. She has very little time to come in and get work done. But when she does, she loves it. She leaves everybody at home. She lets the chaos ensue, and she comes in and she prepares for her week. She said it's the only time where she feels her zen, when her classroom is ready. So she finds great pleasure and balance in coming in. But I was accused of this. She was angry. It just kind of perpetuated and got pretty bad. I deleted the tweet, but I've thought ever since about that accusation of my toxic positivity. It was very difficult for me. I think that my positivity is authentic. I think it's based in fact and the relationships that I build. I do understand the risk for toxic positivity, but here I was trying to do something really good and honor a profession I believe in, and an accusation came my way. My point here is not to make you feel bad or to have you choose sides as to whether I was toxic and positivity there or not, but to think about how to put your energy in the fixable three tires, not the unfixable one. I was not going to change this woman's mind. She didn't know me. I don't even know how she found me. So I needed to take my energy back and put it back in the tires that I could fix. It's really, too, about building your tribe and surrounding yourself with people who will help you recover, those relationships that will help you be part of something big as you move toward rebuilding. So let's talk about rebuilding. Like I said, this is kind of the most fun for me. Whenever we face a crisis, and again, we're looking right now at some big crises, the pandemic, racial inequities or inequalities, a lot of political things, community issues, divisiveness, opinions, but we still need to rebuild and go on. And there are some subsets of areas where we can do this. We'll talk today a little bit about instruction, operations, and the professionalism of yourself and your staff. We're going to talk about connecting with others as we rebuild. You'll begin to sense a theme now. I'm talking a lot about connecting with others. Part of rebuilding too, this is a really important concept, so bear with me here. I think a lot of the world right now is in a suffering contest. And people, by that I mean, especially in education, although maybe not especially, it's just the world I'm living in, it seems like a lot of us are trying to determine who has it worse. Well, the teachers have it worse for this reason. The principals have it worse for this reason. The poor kids have it worse for this reason. We are wasting a lot of time and energy we could put toward rebuilding our future by getting stuck in this suffering contest. And if we find ourselves connecting with others by competing for who has it worse, that is energy we will never get back. I really try and talk to myself and I say, wait, am I in a suffering contest right now? My husband and I actually joke about this because sometimes we'll just be bemoaning our day and then we'll laugh. This is a suffering contest. Let's stop. Let's move on. That's not the way to connect. We want to connect in more ways that come with solutions. This is my new favorite thing. One problem, two solutions. For every problem, try to think about how you could come up with two solutions. It really does multiply your options for moving on if you have two solutions. I started to say this with staff too. I said, whenever we have a problem, let's think if we can together problem solve toward two solutions. It's a beautiful way to rebuild. So I'm going to perseverate a little bit more on instruction, rebuilding with instructional leadership. You'll see two images on this screen. One of them would absolutely no longer have a place in our COVID-19 instructional world, right? The other one does, where we have online virtual gatherings, where we have evolved our instruction to match today's world, where outdated practices are no longer getting in our way. This really is a time, if you want to be a fantastic instructional leader, to think about what type of inequities you are seeing, what type of actionable steps can come out of it. I sat down and I made a little bit of a list for myself, and I said, what outdated practices or inequities did I start to see? And oh, I wanted to put something in the chat. Actually, let me go back a little bit. Hold on. In the chat, write one thing, please, just so that I know you're all with me. Write one thing that you'd like to see changed instructionally. Just one. Humor me. That will let me know that you're all still out there. I've got 21 more minutes with you. So if you could tell me one thing in your building that you would like to see changed instructionally. Do a wait time here. Paul Wilson gets, Paul, if you were in the room with me, I'd give you a prize. Less assessment. Girl, Nicole, you're killing me here. You're doing all the things I'm thinking about. More writing. Increased differentiation from Charlotte. Yes. So wonderful ideas. I'm going to SEL, social emotional learning, bringing inclusion. Oh, I'm getting a little teary. These are so spot on. Yes. Teaching of reading and writing. Maybe not just generation of, but teaching of. Excellent. Keep adding this to this. This is wonderful. Tiered instruction. Embracing diversity of all kinds. Thank you, Melissa. Thank you. All kinds. There's so many different versions of diversity we need to talk about right now. Personalization, social emotional support, conversation. Yes. Dujuana. Yes. Okay. These are wonderful. These are much better than the ones I'm about to show you that I came up with. Here's what I really wanted to move beyond with instruction on the left-hand side of the column. These are things I hope, honestly, that I never see again. Packets. I had a few teachers that were so entrenched in packets. They wanted to make packets. They said, I'm going to come in, I'm going to use the copy machine, we're going to mail them home. And I said, no. It is 2020. We need to move past packets. We can find a way to do this with technology tools. We can also talk about ways to move beyond just busy work or homework for homework's sake. Let's talk about the value. We need to evolve toward value of instruction. Discipline by removal. I don't know about you all, but I haven't had many of those just yank kids out and send them to the office. I should say here, we are not in a remote model in my district. We have some students in remote, but we also have hybrids. We have students half of the day. And I've seen really eradication of discipline by removal, and I'm thrilled by that. Archaic resources. No longer can we pull out those dusty old textbooks and blow off the dust and use them. We really are needing to use technology tools right now. Closed classroom doors, that's over, particularly for any remote learning. That is over. The doors are open. And on the right-hand side, we have a list here of things that I've seen that have really involved our instruction. I'm not going to read to you. You can certainly read them yourselves. But those are some things that are really exciting to me right now that really denote evolution. I can't do this alone. I am not knowledgeable enough about every content standard that needs taught, and so I really lean on teachers. They are the ones that are the experts. They're the leaders. They're the coaches. They're the observers. They're doing this in the trenches, the mentors, the connectors between students and families. And so it's really important, I think, to talk about who you have as on your staff as a leader and to think, too, about who's hiding and who's hogging. I love this concept. Sometimes you'll have staff leaders who are very quiet. They're in their room and they're doing their thing. But you really could lift them out and help them to be drivers in your instructional evolution. Sometimes, too, there's staff members who are hogging the limelight, or they're helping making decisions for your staff and or for yourself. And you don't want that. You don't want anyone to take all the air out of the room for everyone else. So think about if there's any sort of balancing you need to do with that staff leadership. It helps me to think about what issues are really, really important for my school. Every community is different. And if we lined up 10,000 elementary schools, we would have 10,000 different lists of issues that are important for your school. And so it's important to honor those and recognize that what somebody's doing across the country or across the street or across town is not necessarily what should be a driving force in your school leadership and in your instructional leadership. I'm going to move a little bit more quickly here because I want to make sure I cover a lot of these concepts here. I want to talk a little bit about operations. I've got some concepts here. I want to make sure that when I talk about operations, we're talking about ways to maximize student growth. Many, many schools are buried in archaic operations. If any of your districts are out there maybe still using triplicate forms or using the phone to call for subs, I think I'm joking, but there could be some that are out there still doing things like, again, like they were in 1990 or 2000, really we need to move beyond those. Now, it's important, I think, for early career principals to think about your zone of control. I know for me, I always want to, when I find something and I think there's something that we can do to improve, I want to make sure that I fix it right away, right? But I don't have control over a great deal of the evolution that I want to oversee. So it does, I find it very helpful to improve that zone of control, or to recognize the zone of control that I do have. I want to acknowledge that there is basketball practice for the middle school going on, so I had no idea that was happening. See, zone of control. If I had known that I could, that this was going to be so loud, I would have definitely canceled it. But I don't have any zone of control right now with that. So let's identify that and move on. Sometimes there are barriers to updating operations, and I really want to recognize that. They can be expensive. They can be scary. Sometimes we have staff with entrenched habits that are very, very, very difficult to change. So those are certainly some barriers to updating them. The biggest one sometimes is lack of knowledge, and we just don't even know what's out there to do that would help us be more efficient, do it better, do it faster, and make our operations and maximize student growth. So I recognize that lack of knowledge is sometimes the most empowering but the most difficult to overcome. Let's talk, I know I've talked quite a bit about COVID, but I want to talk again about how this is an opportunity for us really to let go of our plans instructionally, with leadership, with operations. We can let go of the way that we used to do things and really get some of our staff members in to honor them and to give them voice and to give them an opportunity to lead. COVID is an opportunity to make sure that we're communicating well. I gave you an example in a story about how I decided to embrace Facebook, reluctantly and begrudgingly, but it helps me to communicate well. It is not the type of world anymore where I can have all my staff together in a room and I can look them in the eye and read their expressions and see how they're feeling. So I need to really think of the opportunity that this has given me to communicate differently using technology or using more phone calls, more face-to-face, connections through Zoom, Google Meet, whatever, how I can communicate well. I want to talk a little bit about remembering what you're paid to do. I laugh because I think it's important to remember we're not paid to be everything to everyone, right, guys? We're really not. And what we are paid to do is lead, not to be decision makers or opinion holders. Not too long ago, my district went through a really hard time where the Board of Education felt like we really needed to move to a full return, and many of our community members disagreed, and they came to me, and they said to me, what do you think? And my answer was, I'm not paid to have an opinion on this. That wasn't to deflect or to be passive aggressive. It was a fact. I'm not paid to weigh in into the gossip and the judgment and the toxic cesspool of opinions. My job is to lead this school as best I can. And I found that incredibly freeing to remember what I'm paid to do. An opportunity to embrace that evolution and watch over some shifting priorities, to avoid that micromanagement and let really good people lead. Again, that's to empower them, but it's also to relieve some of the pressure on you. This is not a sustainable career if you're trying to do everything all the time for everybody. This is just, again, a reminder to look for opportunities. I told my staff, we cannot mess this up, you guys. We cannot mess up how we handle this because it's not been done before. We can do it well, and we don't need to fear doing it wrong. I told them, all we need to do is today. Let's just do today. We can't plan in the ways that we used to be able to plan. Let's just do today really, really well. Now, questions you might be asking right now is, how do I maintain balance as a beginning principal? I really appreciate the mom that said, listen, I got four at home, one's potty training, I'm barely hanging on. And I really do feel for you. I feel for anyone who's trying to parent or to take care of their own parents, or, you know, many of us are in that sandwich generation, or we've got toddlers at home. We have a lot going on. And some of us are asking, is a 12, is a 13 or 14 hour day normal? And to that, I would say, no, it's not necessarily, but you may be asking how long you can sustain this. And that's a very fair question. Maintaining balance is part of that. I'm going to give you some specific strategies here in a moment. But some of you, too, are asking, is this what I wanted? I wanted to be the principal, but I didn't want to be this, right? And so I want to take a moment and think and reflect and dream for what fills you up. So if you could, you don't need to put it, just think about what you're going to put in the chat. When I was a little girl, I had a horse, right? And I rode her. I loved riding her. Now, the circumstances of my life right now, I can't go out and get a horse. Not an option, right? But it wasn't necessarily, I mean, of course, I love my horse, but what it really was about was feeling alive, taking deep breaths, feeling like there was something bigger than myself. And so what I can do is get outside, breathe deeply, feel like I am alive in a world that's bigger than me. So take a moment here, and in the chat, I want you to think and reflect and dream about what fills you up. It's really important that we take time to do this right now, because I want to leave you today with ideas about what you can do to maintain balance. So some of you that have been very active in the chat, I don't want to call you out by name, but I will do it if I don't hear from you. Tell me, what are some things that fill you up, that help you maintain balance during this time? Alyssa, time with her kids. Stephanie finds comfort in prayer. Paul with his family time and extended family. Green trees, Fatima, I love green. Green. Green makes me feel human. Here's a mention of love of family and friends. Jennifer, gets great joy from her students and smiles. We're seeing a lot of family outside. Melissa, I'm a yogi too. It helps keep me balanced. Helping others. This is, many people in crisis have found comfort and direction from helping others. Thank you so much. These are great. So even if you didn't put it in the chat, I would encourage you to think about this, put it on a post-it. Think about what fills you up, because it's really, really important that we all remember to relax and rediscover and revive. Equanimity is my all-time favorite word. Equanimity means mental calmness, composure, and evenness of temper in a difficult situation. That's my goal. I do not always meet it. I don't even know if I'm at 50%, but that is definitely the goal that I'm trying to achieve. And this really is partly why leaders lead, the need and the drive to be the one in a difficult situation that carries people through. That's the whole concept of equanimity, right? And all of us are different. If there are 300 of us on this call, every single one of us has a different methodology for finding our equanimity. It's really about having confidence in yourself and in the system that works for you. It's really important to remember that now more than ever, you are needed as the principal of your building. You're needed for identity. You are needed for safety. And I don't just mean safety within the walls of your building. I mean safety for your students, for your families, to feel like there's some sense of normalcy within the concept of K-12 education. You're needed for guidance and inspiration. And that's a heavy weight there, that one. That guidance and inspiration is a heavy, heavy weight. Many times people look to me and they say, well, what do you think? What's your advice? And often I will flip that and say, well, I can't give you advice, because I wouldn't want to guide you the wrong way, but I can give you perspective and I can give you inspiration. And hopefully my words or my experience can help. That's what people look to us for often. Being an early career principal, you're continuing a mission, whether your school is 3 years old or 100 years old. There's a mission within the walls of that building or behind a computer screen that's in the walls of that building to continue the mission to educate children. And there really should be joy in that journey, guys. There really should. I feel like if we're not finding joy, if we are just worn down and beaten down, then it is time again to recalibrate and go back to that place where we might be able to find some more joy in the journey. This is a time more than ever, that our families and our students are relying on us to be decision makers and motivators. Again, it's a really hard and heavy burden to carry, but remember what I said in the beginning. Someone believed in you. Someone hired you to do this, and you are strong enough to do it. As we wrap up today, there are a few preparedness tasks. I'm not going to have you do any homework. Don't worry. But just think about, if you have a moment to yourself in the next week or so, think about, sorry, that's the bell. We're dismissing right now. That is, this is an opportunity to develop plans for connectivity and communication, to rely on your team. Think about the tasks you could do to be prepared to do this, taking advantage of this opportunity and being a force for change. I sat down not too long ago with my professional journal, and I did develop better plans for connecting and communicating with my people. I developed some ways to really rely on my team and take some of the pressure off me, and how thinking of ways that I could take advantage of the opportunity and be a force for change. So I want to wrap up here just with a little bit of, yes, Egan, this is recorded. Don't worry. I want to wrap up just with some resources, two different types of resources. One are two that I wrote. You're the Principal Now What really was a book that was written for early career principals, and it's not meant to be read from page one to page, I don't even remember, to the end. You don't need to read it that way, because that wasn't the way it was intended to read. So don't be overwhelmed. This would be a text that you can just kind of thumb through and find topics by chapters. And then last March, March 16th, by the way, the worst drop date for a book ever, the Principal Reboot came out. These are both published by ASCD, and the Reboot book is one intended to help principals kind of revitalize and maintain momentum in their school leadership. Other resources I want to point to you, if you're a podcast listener, check out Principal Matters. There's some great ideas on Principal Matters. This is this book is a new one that I just, my friend William Parker has just published on living your best life as an educator. I also am reading Stamped right now by Jason Reynolds, which is a great audio book if you're someone who gets your books in when you're walking the dog. A mention here of EdWeek Teacher, I find and found as an early career principal that staying connected to the teacher experience was a real priority for me. And so I wanted to make sure that you, I'm sure many of you know about this, but make sure that you look up EdWeek Teacher as a way to stay connected to your teacher experience. This is a resource too. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but this is another journal activity. You could find, ask yourself these six questions, revisit your why, how to find peace, seek solutions, how to update your workspace or your courage or whatever, revive positivity and lead. So this is, again, just a journal article or a journal activity that worked for me. You can use this, fill in the columns with your own words if you'd like. So, Honor, I'm feeling bad. I should have left about 10 minutes for questions, but please put in the chat if you have any questions for me. I have about 2.5 minutes. If anybody wants to throw out questions, I'd be happy to take them. Tamara, I'm always going to remember your birthday, girl. Always, always. Because that was the day that, in Ohio at least, everything kind of fell apart. Are there any questions here? Well, thank you, Fatima. All right, Egan, Honor will tell you about the recording here in just one moment. I will, I'm going to wrap up. I do have my website here. If you, again, I'm available to do any kind of presentations, or you can follow me on Twitter. Just check out that website and you'll have everything you need. And now, Honor, I'm going to fade into the distance.
No, thank you, Jen, so much. This has just been a wonderful webinar. I think all of us have gotten so many good ideas. You've been a good pep rally for us, given us a lot of things to, take away that we can use in our schools and use for ourselves and building us up during this hard time. So, Jen, is there any last words and encouragements for all of our early career principals that you'd like to share before we finally close?
Yes, absolutely. I want to go back to one of the first slides where I just said, remember, you're strong enough to do this. I always tell myself I'm not the first principal to ever do this, and I won't be the last. So we are all in this together too. If you need any kind of boosting up, call a friend, call another principal, call me, call anyone from NAESP. Make those networks, because this job can very much feel lonely. And it shouldn't. It really shouldn't, because there's so many of us out there. We're a huge network. And any kind of feeling that you're having, I guarantee you, there's somebody out there in our elementary principal galaxy who's feeling the exact same thing. So thank you all, and don't ever feel alone.